main question is, what should each anybody do for supporting the Palestinians? I think we have, everybody of us, maybe it will be difficult to arrive to the senators, difficult to arrive to the media, it will be maybe difficult to go to Palestine. But you have neighbors, you have family members. Just talk about justice. Just talk about Palestine. Then a lot of things could be hurried. In the war 2014, there are tens of thousands of demonstrators in Illinois. The next war, but the next war, we want to see million. Maybe before the war, we want to see 10,000 asking for ending the occupation to stop the next war. This is the idea. We don't want to do like the police. After the crime, they catch the criminal. We want to stop the war, to making peace by stopping the occupation. So this is the race of the voices and the support of the Palestinian people. I think it's a good step to talk with the senators, but it's the best is how to make more supporters in the community to participate in the BDS. And the BDS, it is a peaceful struggle. It is a legal, peaceful struggle. When you ask the Palestinian not to fight by weapons, not to use violence, you cannot ask them to stop, or can the world to stop this movement, because it is an illegal movement, while America used it against South Africa and against Zimbabwe and Indonesia, and it was legal, and now against Israel it is not.
I just wanted to start off with a couple of questions. As journalists, what are your challenges in terms of reporting on Gaza? What are the problems that you face?
It is, this is the worst job you can have it in Gaza and Palestine. This is the worst one. In general, the journalists in the world, they are writing about the economic, the sport, the social issues, maybe the fun, the cinema, the Hollywood. But for us, it's especially who were working with the American news or the international news, because they care to cover the wars. They are covering the difficult stories, the clashes between the Israelis and the Palestinians. So, as journalists, you are in the middle of that. In 2004, myself as a journalist, in 2008, in the war, in 2012, I was very close to be killed, because they are shelling around my car, and I'm in the car, so I don't know how we survived. In 2014, they attacked my car by helicopter, and my son, he is working with me as journalist, he was in there, in the car, and you can find the photos in the internet. He jumped. I don't know how he jumped from the car, and I saw the missiles coming from the helicopter to my car while my son in it. And when the explosion happened, I don't know what's happened in the car, because it's covered by smoke and it's covered by. So I don't know. I don't discover what's happened with my son in the car. So suddenly I found him get out from this. Smoke, but the car is completely destroyed. And it's enough to tell you that in 2014 war, 17 journalists had been killed in Gaza. 17 journalists had been killed in Gaza, and more than 62 had been injured, and 70 journalist families lost their houses. So this is the life of journalists there, and it is not only for the Palestinian. Any journalist being in Gaza during the war is the same. And it is difficult to if we are talking about the interior issues. We are in a difficult situation, interior situation, political situation, because of the government of Hamas, and they are not allowing the journalists to be. To do the things which we want to do and to talk in the way which we want to talk about. It is they closed many and a lot of press offices and journalists offices and radio stations because it belongs to Fatah or it belongs to the Palestinian Authority. So we are suffering from all the, from the both sides there. But we are surviving, we are continuing because we think that it is our message how to tell the people about the real situation in Gaza.
Okay, great. Maureen, you report from outside Gaza. What are your challenges?
For me, I mean, I can't even, like, compare my experience working out of, like, a quiet office on the north side of Chicago with the experience of my colleagues in Gaza who are living the war when the bombs are dropping. So for me, the hardest part is not knowing if my colleagues are still going to be there when I wake up the next morning. And that, it's I never want to have that feeling ever again. And what we just heard about the 17 journalists who were killed in 2014, Israel is using that same rationale to go after journalists in the West Bank right now. So Israel is rounding up journalists who are reporting on what's going on in the West Bank for so-called incitement. It even detained a Washington Post reporter for alleged incitement. And the Israeli Foreign Press Office like rounded up foreign journalists to lecture them about publishing incitement in the international media. Like, Israel has kind of lost the plot if it thinks that reporting on what's happening in the West Bank constitutes incitement. So so those are the conditions in which journalists are working in occupied Palestine. I don't think we can even compare what happens with international journalists with what is endured by Palestinian journalists whose work is like the backbone of foreign correspondence in Gaza, but, you know, there's always a really unfortunate power dynamic there, and they don't get the protection that they should have. Do you remember the incident with the Reuters journalist who was killed several years ago in Gaza?
Chilling the jib.
Yeah.
He is my neighbor, and he is, you know, he's one of the...
What's it with Abu Shaban?
No, it's Shana'a. Fadl
Shana'a. So that was in the year 2010,
I think.
But the Israelis, like, hit his vehicle that was marked press.
Yeah.
Like, they hit the roof of it. You can see the photos. And there's no consequence.
Yeah.
Even
my car. It's just a TV everywhere. When the war starts, even without war, we bought TV on the car, on the roof, in front of the car, in the back of the car, everywhere. It's phosphoric. So even the light and the only vehicles moving during the war is journalists or ambulances. Mm-hmm. But they want to stop the media. They want to stop the journalists to talk. They want this story to be underground. No, they don't want anybody to know. And this is our problem. It is not how to do the war. How to show the work to the people? You know, this is the idea of the, especially in the American media and the Western world media. They show very small things from what happened there, and everything all the time, like the 50 days war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is 51 days. One day, it is very important because it shows when the war started, who started the war. And this is the media like this, shilling, Hamas shilling rockets to Israel, and Israel replied, killed 30 Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like equal. Sometimes they are not talking about killing 30 Palestinians. So shilling and shilling back, that's it. But when you get inside the story, which nobody tell, you find the difference in the story.
About the construction...
Some agency in the grand bureaucracy of the United Nations that probably has its own acronym. So you can find out more information about this on the Electronic Intifada. If you just search Gaza Reconstruction Mechanism, we actually published the whole confidential memo. Yeah. So apologies that I don't know the acronym off the top of my head.
The video that you showed, the idea...
No, it's not IDF. It is Israeli, but it's not IDF. It's journalists in Israel.
Israeli.
Yeah. No.
So, and this is like
It is Israel. No, no, it is not Israeli government. It is journalists in Israel.
Yes.
Well, it's not exactly a question.
So they can hear you in the back.
It's not exactly a question. It's just the words keep going through my mind. Criminals operating with impunity is sort of what we're all, what you're facing. And you, Chris, you seem very calm about it compared to what you, I know you must be feeling, both of you. I mean, it's, you have, it's just, I don't know, there's no question. It's just like, that's what we're up against, I guess.
Yeah.
You are.
Okay, questions. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, as a journalist, I wonder if you could update us on the political situation of the unity government, any prospects or likelihood of that with Hamas and Fatah, and any kind of connections with Iran or other things that are happening in the politics?
You know, in 2005, Israel, Sharon decided to leave Gaza and to destroy all the settlements there. At that time, the Palestinian, in 2005, Sharon decided to leave Gaza. And at that time, the Palestinian Authority asked him to make agreement that if Israel left Gaza, to be a new arrangement, that to keep those settlements, not to destroy the settlements, and to give the settlements for the people in Gaza. And the United Nations and the United States and Europe, they were ready to pay the price of those houses. But Sharon at that time, he refused that and he destroyed completely all the settlements. And he left Gaza and he threw the key in the sea. So this is the result of that. All the closure around Gaza, which Sharon made, it started. And all the closure after that, this, it separates Gaza from the West Bank. So even the attacks, the Israeli attacks all the time against West Bank and against the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, it made it very weak. So then it gave Hamas the opportunity when they asked for making the election to win the election. When Hamas won the election, at that time, the world starts saying, oh, we ask for democracy, but we need our results. How you elect some people else, we don't want them. And this is the idea of which they are talking about. We need democracy, but we need our results. When Hamas won the election, they refused to recognize Hamas, and they refused to recognize the government which it made by Hamas, but they forget that this government is under Oslo Agreement. They want Hamas as an organization to recognize Israel while BLO recognized Israel at that time. So Hamas being part of the Palestinian political system, Israel and America and the Western world refused that. And, you know, Hamas start to think, okay, we will have our part. We take our part of the Palestinian Authority. So they took Gaza in 2007, and they keep controlling Gaza. And of course, it was a lot of negotiation between Hamas and Fatah, between the Palestinian Authority and Hamas, in Egypt, in Qatar, in Saudi Arabia, and everywhere. But it's no solution. Because the problem is, Hamas is having Gaza, and Israel closed and make a blockade around Gaza, and no connection between Gaza and West Bank. And the Palestinian Authority, they are in West Bank. They have nothing to do with the settlements and with the settlers. The negotiation program is completely stopped. No peace process happened. No negotiation and peace talks happened. And there are no hope for the peace process. It succeeded to arrive to the Palestinian state. And Israel want that. Israel want to keep Hamas in Gaza. And they want a weak Palestinian Authority in West Bank. And they want to say that we have no partner to talk about, to talk with or negotiate with. And in the same time, they want to continue to take the land to make settlements and put more settlers. Now there are something like 500,000 settlers in the West Bank, more than 200 or 250,000 in East Jerusalem. And then we are losing the opportunity for a solution, even the two-state solution. Now we are talking about two-state solution in Gaza and West Bank, one of the settlements and one of the the Palestinian. Yeah. This is the two-state solution they are talking about now. Because 60%, 62% from the land is under the Israeli direct occupation in West Bank. So what, which kind of solution they are talking about? And when we are talking about one-state solution, oh, they're being crazy. That why would you want to destroy the Jewish state? So we are talking, this is our problem now. We have no hope in peace. The easier, you know, the easiest solution is the two-state solution. They destroyed it by settlements and settlers. And the one-state solution, they are destroying it by the name of the religion, the Judaism. Now we have apartheid, reality apartheid. In Israel we have apartheid. The Jewish community and the Palestinian and the Arab community in Israel, it is really apartheid. And we have another apartheid between Israel and the West Bank and Gaza, the occupied territories. And we have third apartheid in Jerusalem between the eastern side and the western side of Jerusalem. And we have the fourth kind of apartheid in the West Bank between the settlements and the Palestinians. So this is our situation. We cannot talk about building a political system or building democracy or building participation in politics while we are in the occupation and in these conditions.
I'd like to just add on to that, that I think one of the results of this complete impasse of any political movement, whether in the Palestinian arena, because there's like, you know, the national unity discussions are what I call the other peace process, because it's like endless meetings about meetings about meetings and no results. So you have a complete impasse in the Palestinian political arena because of the fundamental contradiction between the camp that normalizes relations with Israel, which is the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, which continues on with what Mahmoud Abbas called its sacred security coordination with Israel. And then you have Hamas in Gaza, which is at the head of the resistance camp, which rejects this whole paradigm. So there's no reconciling this fundamental contradiction between the two camps, even though many people hope that talks about talks a few months ago would result in potentially the opening of Rafah crossing. People thought this would be potentially the one practical outcome that would bring a material benefit to the lives of Palestinians in Gaza. So you have that happening on the Palestinian scene, and I think we can all just like call the Oslo Accords done and finished. There's no resurrecting it. I think it's over. It's been 20 years. Netanyahu is not even... It's not even cooperating with the charade of peace talks anymore. And the result of that, I think, we're seeing in the West Bank with young people who are acting out of like individual will and not in any kind of organized armed group context, taking things into their own hands. In a way that it's, you know, not very optimistic, or, you know, some people have different opinions about what that constitutes, whether it's resistance or whatever. But I think what we can learn from it, it means that young people feel like there's nothing for them to pin hopes on anymore. So I think that's what, I think... That's what's manifesting itself in the West Bank right now.
Then we can continue questions after. Okay, well, good question, because we do want to give you an idea of things that you can do. As you said, people in Gaza are still trying to struggle and make a life, and we're trying to support that. Okay, there's two things. One is, on your chairs, I believe you received something about the Gaza 5K walk and run. And Becca talked about that in the beginning. This is being sponsored by UNRWA, which is the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. Mm-hmm. And the proceeds from it are going to benefit UNRWA's community mental health program for Palestinian children in Gaza who are suffering from psychological trauma and PTSD, as you can well imagine. The exciting thing is this is the first time this walk and run have been in Chicago. Up till this year, it's been in Washington, D.C., San Francisco, and New York. And so colleagues of ours were very involved in bringing this to Chicago and the Oak Park River Forest Interfaith Action Group on Israel and Palestine is a part of this coalition doing this. April 23rd, 8:30 in the morning, 4400 Lakeshore Drive. That, I believe, is in your handout. Flyer like that. But if you don't want to walk or run, and but you want to donate, or you want to volunteer, for any of these things, you can go to, it's UNRWA USA. That's one UNRWAUSA.org. Then go to Gaza 5K, then go to Chicago, because there's still stuff from some of the other walks. The exciting thing is that they're at 70% of their Chicago goal, but the disappointing thing is that they're only 70% of their goal. And we've got a couple weeks before the run. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, as we were urged to do, we all want to go home and talk with our friends and family about it. But one of the most important jobs is to support the Middle East Children's Alliance, Mecca. They have a particular project that provides clean water to children in Palestine by installing water purification and desalination units in schools and kindergartens. So again, it's Mecca for Peace, MECA4Peace.org. The final thing is that there's an exciting conference coming up, and I think, Don?
Yeah. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we have a conference at Garrett Seminary and campus in Northwestern, where we're going to be focusing on racism. Racism in Israel against Palestinians and the racialized state with a critique of Zionism and race here. We're going to have workshops on intersectionality, what's going on the campus at Northwestern where they are working on divestment. The Israeli training of police will be an issue in the workshop. In the evening, we'll have Brent Rosen on Thursday evening speaking. And Friday, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, formerly pastor at Trinity UCC.
Again, from C.J. Pipp's perspective, it is so important to keep Gaza in the minds of the American people. I think that people in this room feel that way. There are important websites like the Electronic Intifada website, which reports regularly on it. You see very little in the media about it. I guess if there's not an attack going on one way or another, the media is not reporting on that. But we have to try and continue to get the story out. I'd like you to thank our guests again.
Thank you.